Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Internet's Most Dangerous Tottenham Hotspur Podcast. I'm your host, Greg, and I am joined by two out of our three regulars to talk about an exciting 4-0 victory over Huddersfield Town. Sadly, Brian Ashlock cannot be with us tonight. He finally got a nosebleed after all those years, so our thoughts and prayers are with him. But we are joined by two out of our three regulars, as I said. First up, our sidekick extraordinaire, it's Ben Daniels. Ben, how are you doing tonight?
Pretty bad. Atlanta United finally lost a home game at the new stadium, thanks to dubious MLS officiating. It's a tough one to swallow, but, you know, the boys will rebound.
Did you burn your jersey after the game?
I burned the stadium down.
Okay, that's probably going to make it hard for them in more home games.
We'll never lose there again.
I appreciate your dedication. It's inspiring. It shows how far American soccer fandom has come.
It's really true.
Next
up, that everyone was so dedicated.
If only other soccer fans were like MLS fans. That's truly
the real takeaway.
Truly, how we can improve world football. Next up, we have an even bigger MLS fan. It's our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, how's it going?
It's going good. I've been watching the Kansas City Wiz tonight. They look good.
You think they got a chance against the Fusion on Sunday?
Exactly. It's them or the Metro Stars for the America Cup.
Yeah, I think the Metro Stars, their run-up penalty taking is so good that I don't think the other teams have a shot if they could get it to the extra time.
NASL penalties are better than regular penalties.
They are.
World soccer should do those.
They are, but
obviously better.
But because Americans did it, they will not consider it. Once again, greatness is not recognized on the world stage. I wonder why. So speaking of American soccer, we have some English soccer to talk about. Like I said, Tottenham won 4-0 against Huddersfield. What do you call them, Ben? What is your favorite nickname?
Huddersfield Cow.
Huddersfield Cow. Yes, the fighting milkmaids. Yeah, it was.
They have a guy on their team named Mooey. Like it's
they're fucking with you at this
perfect
point, right?
Synergy. Yeah.
This was a comprehensive beatdown, and it has, I think the main talking point to take away from this game, as evidenced by the 80 million articles talking about is he world class or not, is Harry Kane, who really put a whooping on Huddersfield. Ben, I'm going to ask you the most annoying question anyone can ask a Spurs fan, right? Well, okay, maybe not the most annoying, but certainly the most annoying at the moment. Is Harry Kane world class?
Yes. Next question.
Okay. Good talk.
I mean, so obviously world class is a dumb subjective term that actually means nothing. Does that mean the best player at his position, the top three, the top five, the top 10, a guy you just like to have on your team? Like it's totally arbitrary, but Harry Kane is clearly one of the best number nines, even though he wears number 10, in the world at the moment. His 2017, he scored more goals than anybody but Leo Messi. He has 6 hat tricks this year. He's scored 13 goals in the month of September for club and country, which matches the best total in a month by Messi and Ronaldo. He's in a great run of form, and you know it has stretched back to the end of last season. He looks amazing. He's world class.
So I had not heard the comparison I'm about to make before this week, or I have not heard it very much, and I don't know what started it. Maybe it's that stat Ben just read about the number of goals he scored in the month compared to Ronaldo and Messi. Maybe it is the ridiculous screamer he scored for his second goal against Huddersfield Town. But Michael, is at this point, I mean, is Kane better for Spurs than Bale ever was? Or is it, I mean, is that not a fair comparison given the way their careers have progressed?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird comparison because they're not particularly similar players playing in not particularly similar teams. You know, Bale was a, you know, Bale was a winger or a wide forward who played in a team that basically just sort of like was built around him creating from nothing. And Kane works with a bunch of other players as a single forward. He did score one goal where he created it from nothing this week, which was super cool and fun. But they're not particularly similar. And what Bale did for that Spurs team was incredibly weird and special. What he's done for Madrid since has suggested that really is the level that he's at. So, I mean, I think that one Bale year is still pretty well unmatched. But Kane is now into 3 years of performing at a level which is higher than what Bale did before he made the leap. But in any case, it's kind of a weird thing to be comparing, I think.
Do you think it's a testament to, and maybe it's just a failure of ABB versus Pochettino or just the quality of players around him, but, you know, the fact that, you know, even when Bale was at his absolute best, you know, he never felt like it was a perfectly well-orchestrated attack that maximized Bale's ability, that he worked well with everybody around him. It was just, he was a transcendent talent who did amazing things when he got the ball. And now, given his sort of struggles to really settle in at Madrid and, like, you know, be a real part of that team, is that to Harry Kane's credit that he is so good at working with, you know, Christian Eriksen and Dele Alli, et cetera, or is that have nothing to do with their individual abilities whatsoever?
I'd say nothing to do. Bale's been great at Real Madrid, but he hasn't been hurt. I mean, Real Madrid fans are sometimes stupid about it, but he's been fantastic. His production is just off the charts, and he still does tons of defensive work. So I don't think there's been any trouble with him fitting in at Madrid at all. You know, I think that the AVB team, I think, you know, there was a conscious choice there by Villas-Boas after the failure that he had at Chelsea to create some weird, crazy attacking team that he would absolutely never have players getting in behind his defense. He would always have defensive structure and players back. He would drill the players to be in very specific positions at all times and create a defense. And then because he had Gareth Bale, he didn't have to create an attack. I mean, that was a choice, I think, rather than Bale not fitting in. That was what AVB wanted to do, was have a team that couldn't be broken down but could score enough goals because of Bale.
And if you were inclined to be fair to AVB, which God knows we're not on this podcast, I mean, Bale sort of made the leap during that season. I mean, he never really had a year to plan and build around Gareth Bale, which, you know, I mean, might be part of the reason he left. I don't know. Got fired. But, I mean, Pochettino's had, like, at least two seasons to sort of understand what Kane is and, you know, structure a team around his particular talents. But ABB is still terrible and awful, so.
I don't know. I enjoy the perversity of that decision. That you have it nearly works. I think I've said this a million times, but, like, one bounce goes a different way, the way that team makes the Champions League, and it's, like, this huge thing.
And yet, we had, like, a genuine, whatever definition I think we could agree you want to put on it, a world-class season out of an attacker at Spurs, and we still finished fucking fifth. I really will never forgive ABB for that. I find that, I still think, even accounting for that, I think that is squandering a huge gift. And ABB's the worst. But I don't think that's anything new. Harry Kane was not the only Harry to really shine for Spurs this game. Again, I think it's worth considering the opponent we were playing. But, Ben, Harry Winks seemed to really cement himself as a player, not just a player to watch, but a player who's going to be really taking first-team minutes this week between this match and, I guess, the week before against Apoel. How impressed with you are you with Harry Winks at this moment in time?
Very. I'm very happy with Harry Winks. You know, I've always, well, not always, but since last season, you know, believed, you know, that he looked like he had made the jump from this, like, scrawny kid with some good technique to an actual Premier League player. And it was unfortunate that that got derailed by injury last year. But now that he's back, you know, he doesn't really look like he's missed a beat. And the last two games have both been really good from him. And I was also particularly just pleased, you know, we've talked, I think, last week about Sissoko's, you know, reinvention or reversion to a central midfielder and how, you know, he's become a functional member of Tottenham's squad. And so this week, Pochettino had the choice between starting Sissoko again, you know, as the senior record transfer fee player that he is, or hand Harry Winks another start. And he went with Winks, and I really appreciate that he showed that faith in Winks and gave him that opportunity, and equally pleased that Winks took that opportunity and played as well as he did. So I think we can safely say that Harry Winks is here to stay, and that's awesome.
I think it's sort of striking with Winks that, you know, he looked kind of mediocre earlier in the season. We knew he was hurt. And then sort of the week he says, like, yep, my ankle feels great, not in pain anymore. I mean, we start seeing these amazing performances out of him. And that all sort of logically makes sense. But I don't know. I'm so used to players lying about their physical fitness that it's strange to see everything sort of match up. I mean, you know, Wink says his ankle's okay. And then he puts in a good Champions League performance, admittedly, against the Cypriot team. Puts in a really good performance in the Premier League, and then gets an England call.
Admittedly, against a promoted team.
Still, I mean, a promoted team that was undefeated at home before our match against them this week, and has looked pretty good on the whole in the season. It's just, I don't know. I think we were all really worried about Spurs' depth, and, I mean, Michael, do you think, I mean, I don't think Winks is going to magically solve it, but if this is the kind of performance we can count on out of Harry Winks, how do you feel about Spurs' depth moving forward this year?
Yeah, I've been, like Ben, a big believer in Harry Winks since last year, since those preseason games and early season games where it was clear he'd, you know, he'd gotten bigger, he'd gotten stronger, he was able to dribble a man as well as use his range of passing, and I think that he is a it's really nice to be able to play two passers in central midfield in Eriksen and Winks. And that's going to make to be a nice thing to have against weaker teams like Huddersfield, to be able to really just sort of barrage them with passing in the way that we can. Our depth issues are sadly still elsewhere. But that's nice, especially if Dembele's in trouble.
Ben, how do you feel? So we've seen Winks really shine against, as you said, a promoted team and a Cypriot team. I mean, how do you feel about the prospect of putting him out there against a Dortmund, or I'm not going to say Real Madrid because that's not fair to a 19-year-old, but, you know, an Arsenal, a Manchester United. I mean, how do you feel about playing him in some of these more arduous matchups?
I mean, look, you know, Moussa Dembele is phenomenal. You know, Harry Winks, I think, still has a way to go before he is, you know, one-to-one a better player all around than Moussa Dembele. You know, so if Dembele is fit, you know, I'm still giving him the nod in these big games, especially just because of, you know, his solidity as a midfield presence. He's so much more robust defensively. You know, his ability to hold the ball is pretty unmatched in world football, let alone, you know, on Tottenham Hotspur. So, you know, Winks isn't my first choice yet for these kinds of games. But again, given, you know, the other players we have at our disposal, I don't feel any worse about Harry Winks playing than Musa Sissoko, and there's a lot of reasons I feel a lot better.
Do you feel, you know, I mean, are you nervous if circumstances dictate that, you know, Winks has to start in a North London derby?
You know, honestly, Arsenal is a team, given the way that their midfield looks, that I'm really not worried about playing Harry Winks. You know, they don't really have, like, Aaron Ramsey and El Nene and Granit Xhaka. Like, those are not guys who are going to really bully Winks off the ball and give him fits. You know, we're talking about playing him against N'Golo Kante and Bakayoko at Chelsea, or, you know, Fernandinho even at City. Like, yeah, that's an ask that might be tough. Arsenal, I'm not worried about. They're a joke. you know, but Real Madrid, like, that's a real possibility that we're going to see Harry Winks out there. And, like, yes, Real Madrid are very good. I'm scared of playing Real Madrid anyway. But you know what? Yes, do it. It's Harry Winks time. I don't give a fuck. I want to see Harry Winks out Modric at the Bernabeu.
Yeah. It's not like I want Musa Sissoko at the Bernabeu, I mean.
But you don't want to see Sissoko stride like a colossus across the giants of European football? You know, it's not something you go to bed at night just dreaming of?
I mean, I do like thinking about Dyer and Wanyama just trying to smash everything they see.
God, that would be fun. That will be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about Winks is, you know, he can only play against the teams he's up against. He's done well so far. We'll see how he handles a harder challenge.
I mean, I think that's
what's... I'm definitely inclined to give him the chance, right?
Yeah, and that's what's so encouraging, I think, about Winks right now is... I know, like, these teams aren't any great shakes or anything, but to me, and I know, Ben, with Kane in recent weeks, you've been talking about that it's a progression, it's not season to season, it's all sort of gradual improvement, but, I mean, this is what we're seeing. I mean, there are certain, like, you see players sort of do the next thing, take the next step, and we're seeing that out of Winks this year in terms of, like, he's really contributing as a starter in ways that he wasn't last year, and it's nice to see that next step. And now I'm very curious to see the first, like, kind of good team we play him against as a starter and see how that goes, because I've been very impressed by the last 2 weeks. And, you know, a Cypriot team is a Cypriot team, but it's still the Champions League, and it was still a really crucial game for Spurs, and he looked great in it. You know, he looked great in a Premier League match as a starter. It's just... it's very nice to see our academy producing guys like this. And that's not even, you know, counting guys like Onuma and Carter Vickers, who are having good loans elsewhere, although admittedly at lower levels of the pyramid. But it's just, I don't know, it's really pleasant to see players actually taking next steps again at Spurs.
Yeah, I think the future is bright for a Harry Winks Tottenham.
Ben, you are a noted Josh Onuma supporter. Do you have any thoughts about his season thus far at Villa, since we're talking about youth academy prospects right now?
I don't. I've only watched one Villa game, and he was the standout performer.
You don't make Aston Villa a priority in your weekly viewing schedule?
Yeah, somehow I just can't squeeze them in. but I watched because I saw Onuma was starting, and it happened to be on TV, and so... I checked it out, and he looks good. And by all accounts from Villa fans, he is a class above, and he has done really well there. So that's really encouraging. I hope he comes back, and I hope, you know, we can use him.
Yeah, I mean, some of the journalists who are really plugged into the club say that this is not Spurs giving up on him. And I hope that, you know, they're going to swipe right on Josh and bring him back at the end of the year, because God knows... we could really use another attacking midfielder in case something happens to our very thin list of them right now. But getting back to players who currently play for Tottenham Hotspur, I want to wade into the fullback waters, because God knows we have not talked about that position enough this year. But I want to move to the left side of the field with Ben Davies. Ben has been the subject of a lot of discussion lately. And a lot of Spurs fans seem to think that he
can't stop talking about Ben. Spurs fans.
Ben. Spurs fans think that Davies might have supplanted Danny Rose as Spurs' number one left back when both guys are healthy. Davies has certainly been in a nice little run of form lately. I have a feeling I know what you guys are going to say, but Michael, let's start with you. What do you think of Davies' performances thus far this year? Do you think he's taken another step? And do you think he is as good as Danny Rose or better?
I think he's one thing I would note that I think has been the is he's slow. But the biggest problem in his game in the last two seasons has been errors, particularly on the ball in the defensive third, where he's been just too prone to turnovers, which is like the thing the guy's not supposed to do. He's supposed to be our sort of ball control, having like another midfielder out on the wing, even if he can't run. But he's been sloppy, and this season he's been much better controlled. In a way that I've been impressed with, as well as, you know, developing, I think, more creativity. Spurs generally seem to be having more sort of like pre-planned actions to break down defenses and using his passing ability more effectively. So that's been really good. We saw in the Chelsea match what happens when an opposition team doesn't respect the ability of a fullback to beat a man or to, if they get forward to track back. And we can't afford in our system against really good teams to carry, at least certainly we can't carry more than one of those. So we're going to need someone like Danny Rose in a lot of our big games. But he's been good this year. He's been really good.
I mean, it seems to me that the difference between him and a guy like Trippier is, I think Rose is probably a better fullback still. I think he offers more, if only because he's fast and Pochettino likes to play that way. But, I mean, like you said, Michael, especially if there's a fast guy on the other wing, you can get away with playing Davies on a team of Tottenham's caliber, whereas Trippier, I feel like you can't.
As we did with Walker last year.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, Ben, how do you feel about Davies' place in the team? I mean, I know you're not always his biggest fan, but is he an acceptable player for you? Is he just not good enough for Tottenham's level? Do you think he's bad? Do you think he's good? I mean, where do you come down on Davies, given the way that popular opinion has shifted on him lately?
I think I would describe Ben Davies as the player that Spurs fans seem to think Kieran Trippier was last season.
That's a good description, actually.
He's not quick, like, everybody knows that. But he is a very, very good attacker. And I've always liked the way Ben Davies plays fullback more than a Danny Rose or a Kyle Walker in the attacking third. I think, you know, he makes those underlapping runs where he comes inside. He combines passing with the attacking midfielders in really neat combinations. He has the ability to drive down the wing to a degree. He has good off the ball movement. He can deliver a decent cross. I think he plays that attacking role really, really smartly, and it seems like he's gotten a lot more polished over the last year or so. Where, like Michael said, he's not making a lot of mistakes. He's not giving the ball away cheaply or stupidly, and we seem to have sort of recognized the way he functions as a fullback and how it's different than a Danny Rose and are playing to those strengths and not expecting him to, you know, beat a man down the wing. And I think as a result, he's looking really, really good as an attacking option. But that said, I think Ben Davies is an appalling defender. I don't know why everyone seems to think he's like, that he's a defense first kind of player. Maybe because he's slow, you just assume, well, then he must be good at defense. But I mean, he heads up one-on-one. He gets dribbled way too frequently for my taste. He gets caught upfield a lot. It's not perfect. Danny Rose is a much more complete player. And yes, Danny Rose gave an interview to The Sun and pissed off a lot of Spurs fans, but I think, on balance, he is still the better fullback. But that said, you know, now that we have a guy like Aurier in, and we're not going to have to run out, hopefully, a Trippier Davies fullback situation very often, you know, we have the tools to sort of mitigate his deficiencies in a way that just lets him be a extra, like Michael said, central midfielder out on the wing who does really good things with the ball. I think he's a very useful player for us. And, you know, given the number of games we have, you know, with 2 games a week for the next foreseeable future, you know, even when Danny Rose is healthy, he's still going to get a ton of minutes and still going to play. But against the big teams, I'm Team Danny all the way. You know, he just plays both sides of the ball more effectively. And that's really it.
I guess what is worrying for me about Davies is just that, unlike Trippier, I feel like if we lose Rose, which I guess could, who the fuck knows what's going to happen with Rose, because you don't know. Bridges, he was burnt, how that's going to be repaired, if it's going to be repaired. But if we lose him, I think we're really going to roll with Davies, and that just concerns me in a way that, I don't know. I mean, Pochettino has done these sort of fullback derbies before. I just worry that we like him enough and he's just good enough where we're just going to go with it. And I think that causes problems against better teams. And at the level we're trying to operate now, that worries me.
I would share that fear, if only because that's what I thought was going to happen with Kieran Trippier. You know, everyone's saying, well, he's better than Kyle Walker anyway. We don't need Kyle Walker. Trippier's the man. And, you know, this season, obviously not against Huddersfield. He actually had a very good game. But, you know, the fans have sort of realized that, okay, yeah, Kieran Trippier is pretty limited and not good enough. And Pochettino realized that and signed Serge Aurier this summer. And so I feel pretty good about the fact that if we lose Danny Rose, he's not going to just trust that Ben Davies is good enough for a whole season. We'll sign another left back, and it'll be probably somebody pretty good.
And Ben's coming to defense of Mauricio Pochettino. Cats marrying dogs. Up is down. Left is right. It's a weird night here on Wheeler Dealer Radio.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's kind of like I was nervous about the Ryan Mason Bentaleb midfield, and we weren't buying a defensive midfielder, and that seemed incredibly stupid. And then Pochettino pulled Eric Dier out of his ass and made him one of the best defensive midfielders in England. So, you know, I think
it all just works out eventually for some reason that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think even when it looks like Pochettino hasn't identified problems and is a little slow to correct them over the course of the season, he seems to know what they are and address them at some point. So we'll get there.
So, speaking of problems that we took a while to address, Moussa Sissoko had a goal. He scored a fourth goal in garbage time against Huddersfield. We talked a little bit about this on the podcast before. A lot of pundits, not so much Spurs fan, but a lot of pundits have been sort of discussing just the Sissoko sauce. I don't know. I don't have a good name for it, but how he's just so much better at Spurs because we're playing him in midfield this year, and he had a full preseason. And he bought into the team, and he's motivated for the World Cup and all this other stuff. I mean, Michael, is he like actually decent, or is it just the bar was so low he could crawl over it, and now he's just like barely useful, and that's such an improvement we don't really care?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I think he's not producing that much. He's not dribbling that much. He's not getting into particularly dangerous areas. He scored the goal. He's assisted a few shots, which is okay. It's not like he's producing a ton of defensive contribution and sort of like, you know, stopping the ball one on one kind of stuff. But he hasn't hurt us, and he hasn't given the ball away constantly. So he, and to the degree that, like, you know, he runs and works and is a useful and productive member of that midfield three, I'd much rather have Harry Winks in there in most situations. You know, I'd also rather have, you know, Moussa Dembélé or Victor Wanyama. So it's not like those are the only choices. But if Spurs have our midfield that we've got right now, if Wanyama's out, if Dembélé's out, I'd want to have Winks in there. But Sissoko has shown, I think, that he is a reasonably useful member of a three who isn't going to hurt you that much in that system. So that's nice.
It's an improvement over nothing. Ben, are you slightly less homicidal every week when you see him on the pitch, or is it all just the same as it ever was?
Yeah, I mean, like Michael said, I would want to use him as sparingly as possible, but it is nice to know that when we do have to use him, it is not going to be the just complete calamity that we saw last year. And if that's the best we can hope for, then, you know, so be it. But, you know, that's something at least, that you can know you can throw him in there and he is not actively making your team terrible, which he did time and time again last season. So I'll take what I can get with Sissoko at this point.
So let's move on past Sissoko. We have an international break coming up this week. Go ahead. Do you have more to share about Musa?
No, I just want to say, because I'm always very, very mean to Kieran Trippier, I thought he had a very good day at the office against Huddersfield. His passing in particular was very good. His headed through ball for Harry Kane's first goal was very, very smart. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that that was deliberate, because he had been playing those kind of incisive through balls, like vertical passing from the back, all day. And yeah, I thought he used the ball well. You know, he didn't just look for an early cross at every opportunity. He was actually like combining with players and moving the ball into dangerous areas. And again, you know, I think he is still deficient in a ton of ways, but that's a nice improvement, and it was a pleasure to see.
I think after the Barnsley game this year, or Burnley, one of them, we were talking about if Trippier can't play well against these sort of bottom feeder teams, then like, what the hell's the point of Trippier? Because, you know, I mean, even I think the least charitable sort of perception of Trippier is he is here so we can rest our starter like Aurier or last year Walker against the sort of worst team, so we've got fresh legs for, you know, teams like City or Dortmund in the Champions League or whoever. And it was nice to see, because it's not like we don't think Trippier's capable of playing well against bad teams. I mean, he did it down the stretch last year. He's done it against Watford every time we've played them. I mean, he is capable of doing this, and it was nice to see him actually do it again. Maybe not having the pressure on this time had something to do with it. I don't know, but it was nice to see it again.
Anyway, back to international football.
Yeah, no, I'm using that. So Harry Winks and other Tottenham players are having international football this week, which I know we're all super thrilled about. I for one, am looking forward to the U.S. men's national team blowing their qualification of the World Cup this week. But after that, Spurs start what I think could be generously described as a really fucking hard run of games. I'm going to lay it out real quick for the listeners. On the Saturday the 14th, we play Bournemouth at home, but it's at Wembley, so as we all know, we're cursed to lose that one. Following that, we go to Madrid to play Real Madrid at the Bernabeu. Then, and that's on the Tuesday afterwards. On the Sunday after that, we play Liverpool at Wembley. On the 25th, after that, which is the Wednesday following that, we have West Ham at Wembley. On the 28th, which is the Saturday after that, we play Manchester United at Old Trafford. On the 1st of November, which is the Wednesday after that, we play Real Madrid at Wembley. Then we play Palace the following Sunday at Wembley. And following that, we have a Saturday game against Arsenal at the Emirates, with, in short order, a game against Borussia Dortmund in Germany. It is... Michael, I'm not sure if you could come up with a tougher stretch of games if you tried, but it's pretty fucking hard. How are you feeling about Spurs going into this stretch of games? Because I don't feel like any level of health or fitness would have me feeling good about this.
Yeah, I mean, the one positive thing I would say is that, like, 1 point from the Madrid games would be great.
Yes. If we get a point from the German games, I would be pretty certain we're going to get out of our group.
So like, those are hard games, and I think there's a very good case in terms of sort of manage, like, you know, there's a very good case in terms of wanting to be the sort of team that players like Christian Eriksen want to stay on. that you're going to go out and you're going to give Real Madrid a run for their money. Like, that you're not going to just pump that game. I think there's a case for it. But it's the sort of game that if we end up down in the 30th minute, we don't need to freak out.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make some subs. You can try to do what you need to do. But yeah, if we don't get Wanyama and Rose healthy, and it seems like there's a good chance that Wanyama's gonna be healthy, and a pretty unlikely that Rose is gonna be healthy, it's gonna be tough. I mean, I don't know how you get through those games with one left back. We're going to need to see. Are we gonna use Sonny out there? Are we going to do that bizarre thing where we use everyone on the wrong side and play Sissoko as a right wing back? Is Walker Peters gonna play left side? I don't see a lot of solutions to the left back problem.
I see no way we get through this set of games without Walker Peters getting some minutes. I see no way that happens.
Maybe. I don't know what we're going to do. It's going to be very difficult.
Yes. Ben, this is a really tough stretch of games. On the other hand, it's kind of exciting in a weird way. I mean, we get to play Madrid twice. We get to go away to Dortmund. We have a couple exciting derbies in the middle of all this. I mean, how do you balance the tear of a tough fixture list like this with the sort of really, like, you know, games you get hyped for one after the other after the other? I mean, do you think it's going to be more exhausting and frustrating, or do you think, you know, is it all just, it depends on what kind of results we get?
Oh, it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. You know, like, the big games are fun, but the fact that we don't really have a chance to catch our breath, there's no game where we can give anyone a rest, you know, incredibly say, all right, Harry Kane, you take the night off.
I mean, we have that West Ham game in the League Cup. We have that West Ham game in the League Cup. I can absolutely see us punting on that. There's a Palace game in the middle of all of it. I could see us maybe taking that one a little bit easier. But other than those two, you're absolutely right.
You know, it's pretty relentless. And so it's going to really test the limits of our squad and our ability to rotate. You know, it's one of those things where if we come through it okay, we're going to look back on it and be like, wow, that was a wild ride. And if we don't, it's just going to be absolutely miserable. You know, and I have no idea how good we are yet or how good these other teams are. You know, Man U seem like they're this most all-conquering behemoth right now, but they haven't played anybody good. And maybe when they come up against Spurs, they'll get found out. Or maybe they'll just roll over us and beat us 4-0 like they've beaten everybody else. I don't know. I don't know what to expect from anything. You know, Liverpool is such an erratic team. Arsenal seemed like they finally, like, figured out how to be good again. I'm terrified. But I don't know. I'm a Spurs fan. I think being terrified by every fixture and feeling like, you know, you're dangling off the edge of a cliff is just sort of a normal sensation for us. So, I don't know.
I think you're right. I think I spend probably more time figuring out how we could potentially blow a game than how we're actually going to win it. So, I can certainly empathize with that. One thing worth considering as we look at this pretty brutal stretch of games, it seems like Wanyama is going to be ready for some minutes after the international break. I don't know if he's going to be ready to start, but it looks like he's going to be healthy after the break. There is, I think, Eric Lamella, as of this past Monday, was 2 weeks away from full training. So maybe by the time we hit November, he's available for sub minutes. But, you know, I'm not counting on that. It seemed like a week or two ago, Rose was going to be nearing fitness towards the end of October, but we haven't heard anything on him lately. It'd be nice if some of these guys come back. Moussa Dembele is, like, apparently dead, but maybe he's not. I'm not counting on him showing up unless something changes drastically. I think Wanyama is going to help a lot, and he might be the key to actually getting through this run of fixtures if he's actually healthy, but who the hell knows? It's going to be really fucking hard.
Yeah, I don't care for it.
It's
just like my thoughts on the Champions League group, right? Like, I want an easy group because that means that we're more likely to win. But if we happen to play the hard teams, as long as we beat them, I'm happy. I don't really know.
Well, the nice thing is, if we can get through it, we have about a pretty, I don't want to say easy month, but a more relaxed month. It's West Brom, Leicester, Watford, Opoel, Stoke, Brighton, and then Man City in mid-December. So, and then following them is Burnley, Southampton, and West Ham to end the year. So if we can get through this fixture list, we'll be in a good spot. But
although those are all, there's 2 weeks there where we have double game weeks, where the two Premier League games a week with a midweek Premier League match and two Champions League matches that we're going to need to take at least 3 points from. So,
and I haven't even mentioned if we haven't even talked about if we get to the next round of the League Cup, so that could be another
fuck the League Cup.
Oh yeah, we should play our fucking academy team in the West Ham game. I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah.
Besides, if there's any team that we could maybe beat in a league in a cup match with our academy team, it's probably West Ham. So that would be a lot of fun, actually. We should definitely do that. Yeah.
I would just hate to see us punt on a cup final, you know?
You know, I mean, Pochettino's talked about how we're a much bigger team now. So that would be a real, putting down a real marker, showing how good we are. But I don't know. It's a pretty brutal stretch of games. I hope we come through it and we're not all dead. I look forward to hopefully very surprisingly happy podcasts during that period. But who the hell knows? It's going to be crazy. Everyone rest up over your international break because you're going to need it.
If everyone could come down with internationalitis tomorrow,
that'd be great.
That would be pretty
Eric
ideal.
Dyer especially.
Yeah.
We are running him into the ground, that poor guy.
We always do it. We always do that. He should be used to it by now. Hope Harry Winks is the only guy I don't want to see come down with internationalitis, even though I kind of do, because he looks so excited about his England call-up. But, I would really like everybody to get a week, 2 weeks of full rest in there before we start this brutal fixture list. But yeah, they're going to rest up, and so are we. This is going to be our last podcast till the next game. That's going to wrap us up. Ben Daniels, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Twitter at Gary Rootbeer.
That's very good. Michael Cayley, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
Yeah, so I'm writing at 538. I'll be on Nordic Bet pretty soon. You can read me in Swedish if that's what you've always wanted.
You know you're a real football journalist when you start writing for shady-sounding betting websites.
Mm-hmm. As always, most of my thoughts are collated on Tumblr at brettrainbow.tumblr.com.
Of course, as always. And I can be found on Twitter as Skipjack at Skipjack0079. For Ben, for Michael, and of course, for Brett Rainbow, I am Skipjack. Come on, you Spurs.